read suicide ideation rates stay the same afterwards, and when you read about the plumbing and what goes on afterwards with the plumbing, and you know, it's just disgusting. Disgusting is often used as a sort of twee word, but it is disgusting. It is gross. It's awful. You know, and the complications. I was just reading earlier about the complications and how people should be warned. I mean, it is just, you're setting somebody up for a lifetime of medical intervention. And
yes.
And as I sort of, I think last week we talked about Jazz Jennings, and how he had a sort of micropenis, and basically this child's mother, Susie Green, Jackie's mum, documented the entire journey, and you can see it on YouTube on a BBC documentary, and she is laughing. She is pictured laughing that because her child has been on these puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones, he's got, you know, his genitals are all shriveled and there isn't much to work with. And you can see her and her mother, they've sort of got their hands in front of their mouths and they're giggling like schoolboys. And I'm thinking, how dare you? How dare you invade your child's privacy and dignity in that way? That is so abusive. Crucially, when you do this then on children, so she's advocating a kind of why wait policy, that when kids want the blockers and the hormones, they should have them. When you do this, and you do this procedure on children, because there is not enough material to work with, they have to take sections of the bowel and the colon, and it's much more dangerous and more radical. And you'll remember that Jazz Jennings had complications. And I was reading that actually, when you have this procedure done, this vaginoplasty, it often needs to be redone about every 10 years. And because they're using kind of sections of the bowel, eventually the poor child ends up needing a new bowel. Now, in this documentary, Susie Green's child, this is kind of how they manipulate us, because we've only ever seen said child as a woman. But when he is talking about his body and himself, and he talks about the surgery and he says, oh, that's gross, that's disgusting, I don't want to think about it. And at that point he was 18, and I was thinking, how on earth, you don't know what was done to you, you can't even contemplate it because it is that horrific, how on earth could you consent? How could you? And when you read Jackie Green's story of how she knew that her child was trans, basically she groomed him, and a lot of it doesn't make sense. So she reckons that he was putting a ladies' brassiere, a bra on at 18 months. I'm thinking, yeah, come on. I mean, you know, a 13-year-old struggles to put a bra on for the first time. An 18 months old, no. And then aged 4, he was supposed to have said, why did God give me the wrong body? Well, there's no 4-year-old I know that would say that, including mine, who are extremely bright and precocious. And then age 6 said, when do I get the operation to have a new body, mummy? And, you know, this child has been kind of groomed.
How does a kid know at age 6 that there was a surgery to get a new body?
Yeah, quite. I mean, so, over the years, Susie Green has changed her accounts about, things don't stack up, but it seems to have been that, you know, she it's all about her neurosis. She was worried that her son seemed to be playing with feminine toys and, you know, exhibiting feminine traits. And so that worried her, and her husband didn't seem to like it very much. And there seems to have been a lot of projection going on. Maybe the son would have grown up to be gay. Maybe he would have grown out of it. Who knows? I mean, like, to give you an example, so my son is 4, and yesterday we went out to run some errands to the shops, and he said, "Mummy, can I hold your handbag?" And I said, sure. And he was walking along holding my handbag. I wasn't thinking, oh, that's a lady's handbag and that's a lady's thing to do. You know, a kid wants to hold my bag. Fine, bless him, let him. You know, let's not kind of project anything onto it, other than, you know, little boy wants to hold a bag. Maybe he just wanted to hold it.
So wait a minute. You didn't phone up a surgeon?
Funny that. Yeah. I said, oh my goodness. Oh, you're obviously trans. It's like, yeah, right. Sure. You know, and this is the thing with kids. They explore all kinds of things through play. We know this is how children
Caroline, there's another part to the exploration. They explore with parental guidance. I mean, for heaven's sake, folks, here in the United States, we have movie codes, right? One of the warning codes is what, audience? PG, and now PG-13. What does that mean? Parental guidance. So we want the parent there to guide the child to not make a wrong decision in watching a film that may have some racy content in it. But if they want to take puberty blockers and want to mutilate their body, the adult is supposed to, the parental then is supposed to stop the guidance and is supposed to jump in with both feet and say, okay, I'm with you. Makes no logical common sense whatsoever.
No, and the same in the UK. You can't vote till you're 18. You can't get a tattoo. You know, you can't have piercings. And yet, you can, you know, elect to have puberty blockers and know that you're in the wrong body. So I really felt, I use this strong language because I felt that the reality was brutal enough and I was sick of the euphemisms being used. And it had really annoyed me that Susie Green on our debate had said, oh, trans girls are girls. And I was thinking, no, they're not. They're boys. They've got, you know, penises and they've got boys' bodies. You know, they're not just a girl because you say they are. Let's be very clear about what we're talking about, particularly as it was a safeguarding issue, because the debate had been about the girl guides and should the girl guides have allowed trans girls, you know, in other words, boys in, and they're saying that if they go off on an overnight and they do some camping, then your teenage daughter could be sharing a tent with a boy and you as a parent aren't allowed to know about it and you should, you know, get over your bigotry. And I'm thinking, yes, yeah, so you're going to have guides potentially come back pregnant or, do you know what I mean?
That's right.
It's safeguarding. So we'd had this debate and she's going, oh, trans girls are girls. They just want to be like other girls and be with their friends. And I just thought, I'm so sick of this. This is couched, you know, I think, British people and American people are pretty similar in a way. We're tolerant. We are tolerant. We are accepting. You know, none of us actually want to go around hating on minorities. We don't want to go up to a trans person and say, ha ha, you're really, you know, nobody wants to do that. But at the same time, we need to have some safeguarding. But Susie and the lobby are taking this language of compassion and just using it to manipulate us into giving away our boundaries and our safeguarding. And it really just incensed me, this kind of trans girls are girls. No, they're not. They're not. Let's, you know. So, and also because she had gone after other people. So I wasn't the first people she'd charged.
Right,
the police.
Right. I saw that too.
So I thought, no, I'm just going to call this out. And because she is a public person influencing public policy, I said last week they're training the police, they're influencing local education authorities, businesses, voluntary organisations. Everybody's adopting this sort of trans-friendly towards children, you know, policy. And no one is claiming that you should be anything but compassionate and sensitive with a child who has a genuine, you know, gender dysphoria.
Sure,
although
sure.
Whether or not you actually validate the delusion is another question. But no one is advocating that we're mean to kids and we go hating on kids or anything. But at the same time, let's be very clear about what this woman is advocating. And she's advocating no safeguarding. She's making girls in particular very unsafe. You know, we have policies in the UK that says if your child is uncomfortable with a boy in their bathroom, then they should get over it, bigot, and go somewhere else. You know,
Lord, we had same
honestly,
madness.
And there's actually LGBT Youth Scotland, and in schools they've written all this guidance, and they've said if a child is uncomfortable about somebody with the opposite sex, you know, somebody a trans child, you know, in using their bathroom or their facilities, then actually they should go elsewhere. And I was thinking, you know, that's so, you know, you've got children, you know, teenage girls, and they, you know, be on their periods, and they want that private space. We need that private, intimate space, you know. And you're basically saying that a girl has got to be completely happy with stripping off with in front of a boy in a changing room or a locker room. No, that's not okay. You know, stop. You're actually grooming children. You're grooming children to let down their boundaries. So Susie puts these tweets out to kind of play victim and go, oh, see, it wasn't about misgendering. Look, she said these terrible things. And everyone was going, yes, yes, glorious. glorious. Let the world see what Caroline said. Let us see. Castration, yes. Mutilation, yes. You know, let's actually peak trans a few more people and let them see the reality of what we're talking about here. You know, and she, it really backfired on her because she was like, oh, this is so terrible. And, you know, it's such vicious, nasty abuse. And I wasn't being abusive. It's like, if you're going to be a public figure and use your child as advocacy, then, you know, you need to accept that you're going to be called out on it. And if you can't cope with that, then step down from your advocacy role.
Yeah, maybe you shouldn't have done it then.
Yeah, and to be completely fair, although obviously I'm very wary of the idea, I don't think trans kids exist, but because I think you can't know. But the charity that she leads, Mermaids, before she took over, did have a much more watchful waiting approach. You know, and it was an informal group. It was set up by parents to support each other, but it had much more of a watchful waiting. If you think your child is like this, then just let them get on with it. And you, but under Susie, now Susie has got no senior management qualifications or experience.
No, nope.
She's got no medical experience. She's got no psychological counseling experience. She was an IT manager and basically through her time at Mermaids has managed to get herself into the role of CEO. And, you know, because she has used her daughter's journey and put her daughter, well, it's not her daughter, it's her son. See, I'm all over the place now, aren't I? Because I've been told daughter so many times by the police. But because she's put this child, Jack or Jackie as he is now, because she's put Jack in the public eye and uses them for their advocacy, then she says, oh, it's really mean to be attacking my lovely daughter. And I'm thinking, nobody's attacking your child. We actually all feel very sorry for your child. I'm very glad if, as she claims, that the child is living a very happy and fulfilled life. Good for them, actually. Good for them if they are. I'm not saying it was the right thing to do the surgery, but if they're trying to make the best of the situation that they are in. And but interestingly, the child keeps out the limelight. The child hasn't jumped to the mother's defence. The child has said nothing. So, you know, Susie was saying, oh, they're attacking my child and it's so dreadful and what have you. It's like, but you have put this out there, Susie. You know, and I'm not actually, if you were another mother with a child who'd done what you did, I would still feel that that was equally outrageous. But if you weren't advocating it publicly for other children, then I wouldn't be saying anything. But actually, you're using your own experiences to advocate for this for other children and saying why it's right. So, you know, if you don't like it, you shouldn't have put your child in the public domain. And you can't say, oh, my poor child, oh, it's being really attacked, how dreadful it is. When actually, as she conceded herself, I was criticising her actions. And she was the one that was laughing over her child's shrunken genitals on, you know, on a BBC documentary. So she can't have a cake and eat it. So it kind of like played out and I started getting, you know, really just increased sort of hate on social media. But at the same time, loads of people were behind me and were saying, no, this is right, actually. Let's think about this.
Well, you know, Caroline, let me just interject here. Caroline Farrow is live from her home in Surrey, England, and we're talking about this complaint that was filed. Now, people are wondering, did you ever have to go to the interview with the police?
No. So basically, because she had then outed these tweets herself, it could never go anywhere. But the police were saying, until such time, oh gosh, sorry, I've just picked something. Until such time as she has actually withdrawn her allegation with the police, until such time she's withdrawn it, then we can't drop it.
Well, Caroline, you're not alone. Do you know who Harry the Owl, the Limerick?
Oh, yeah, I know. I know Harry very well. Harry Miller. We met because we were both sort of victims. Yeah, and you've seen what happened to him today.
Well, I'm reading his tweet right now from Fourth Wave. I am stunned.
It's just unbelievable.
I am stunned. Now, this just happened today. I am stunned, shocked, upset, aghast, and fuming. Just had Inspector Wilson from @Humberbeat call me, RE, my complaint. And then he gives a transcript of the conversation. Apparently he recorded it. And at one point, Harry goes, I'm taking part in a national conversation. Cop, well, why do you feel the need to do that? Harry, because I am a citizen and I believe political engagement is necessary. Why are you asking me? Cop, because I don't see why you feel the need to say this. And then Harry says, I don't think women, men are women, or men can become women, or women can become men. That's a hate crime. Cop, well, it could be me, okay, but I'm angry that you're ringing me and asking me why I'd want to be involved in politics. Him, you have every right to be involved in politics, but why would you tweet your views when it upsets the trans community? So what? We're not allowed to say anything publicly if it upsets a Susie Soylent Green? This is insanity.
It completely, and it completely is. You know, and I couldn't believe it when I was reading it earlier. So this is it, you know. So Susie Green is saying, oh, she's obviously been malicious and what have you. And but until she had formally withdrawn her complaint with the police, it was still being investigated. And then eventually they rang me and they said, oh, we've got good news, we're dropping it. But they gave me a warning about you need to be more careful. And I said, I refused to accept it. I said, what do you mean be more careful? I was tweeting about a public figure, not to her. She was complaining about her daughter or her child. And, you know, actually, I wasn't saying anything nasty about her child, only something factual. I wasn't attacking the child. You know, the child is now 25 anyway. You know, you can't pull that card. And I am allowed, you know, and one of the reasons that you let this horrible man that was doing all kinds of stuff to me is because you said, oh, it was his opinion. So I'm allowed to give my opinion about a public figure. I'm allowed to give my opinion about a public figure to, I'm allowed to publicly tweet my opinion about a public figure who's influencing public policy. So, you know, basically, can you go away with your be more careful next time? Because, you know, like Harry the Owl, we've got a right. We've got a right to discuss these things publicly. We've got a right to draw public awareness to it and to say, look, when you talk about trans children, this is what this lovely Farfy woman that you're giving money to under Comic Relief and other organisations, she's publicly funded. She's dictating our policy. And yet look what she is advocating. And in 30, 40 years, we are going to have major lawsuits because people are having their lives wrecked by this. And, you know, you were talking last week about stuff that you'd seen on a forum. Well, I saw something on Facebook earlier about a 17-year-old who had been transitioned since the age of 13 and, you know, was now having second thoughts about having their double mastectomy. And, you know, I thought, because apparently this is now happening in America too. You know, 13 and 14-year-olds are, having double mastectomies.
Caroline, National Geographic cover, January 2018. The inside of the entire magazine was dedicated to this. And the feature story was a 15-year-old California girl who had gone to Thailand like Susie Green's son, and had this was a girl, and had undergone a double mastectomy so that she would look like a boy, and so she could skateboard topless on California beaches. Not making it up.
I know. Well, listen to this. I've got this in front of me. So this was shared by a group called Women's Voices Matter on Facebook, and it says, I'm not sure if I'll manage to get the help I need here, but I'm trying because this isn't something I'm able to talk to anybody about. I'm a trans guy, female to male, and I'm 17, on testosterone for 3 years. And I have been out as a trans guy for longer than that. I'm 17. I pass perfectly as male. My name is changed, and most people don't know I'm trans except old friends and family. I haven't had my surgery yet, but recently I got a call to get it scheduled. When I did, I realised I was scared. I don't want to get a mastectomy. I know if I do get a mastectomy, it will only be for practical reasons, not being able to be shirtless in public, not wearing a binder, going to the pool and beach without feeling weird, etc. But I really like my body. I like my boobs and I don't want to get rid of them. All of this got me thinking, and recently I've been realizing that I kind of regret transitioning. I regret it because I know that if I could go back, I would stay and live my life as a girl. But I'm scared to say that to my parents. I'm scared of public humiliation, and I'm also scared of being a masculine woman. And I don't think I'd be unhappy living as a guy.
Oh my goodness!
No, so this is a girl.
Poor girl.
I just don't think it's worth it. But if I don't get a surgery, I can't see myself living as a guy either. It would mean wearing a binder for the rest of my life.
And wow.
These kids are just being indoctrinated into so much harm. And, you know, Mumsnet is a very good forum for this. And someone said on Mumsnet that they had a sibling who was trans. I don't know which way, you know, whether it was male to female or female to male. And they were saying that actually, because the family has to invest so much in emotional energy in this whole, you know, in the transition, and the family has to become good with it and accept it, that then, you know, it puts the person in a position that if they want to change their mind, they don't feel that they can, because everybody's had to accept this alternate reality.
Yes.
You know, and so, I mean, it is, you know, we can talk about there's in 20 years' time, there's going to be X amount of lawsuits, but you know, it's not the money.
Well, they're going to be
people's lives being absolutely
right. Wrecked. Thank you, Caroline Farrow, because there's going to be chimeras walking around who are going to regret and rue the day that their parents. You know what's going to? There's going to be. Let me tell you what's going to happen. And the actor James Woods, real James Woods, tweeted about this one time. You know what's going to happen? There's going to be a rash of homicides. You know what it's going to be? It's going to be these children, these chimeras, who are going to realize that their parents, for fame and YouTube glory and social media acceptance and all the things they didn't get when they were teenage losers or young adult losers, are going to go and find their parents and are going to take them out. They're going to freaking take them out, and it ain't going to be pretty. And who's going to blame them? Of course, we're always against murder, but you're going to understand the mental state of affairs. Now, I've seen you write about this. You know, if George Orwell were alive today, he could not have written, he couldn't have imagined that Britain, that the country that supposedly beat the Nazis, I don't think you did, supposedly beat the Nazis, would turn out to have such a minute, this is a minuscule, I mean, you're talking hundreds of a, tenths of a percent of the population actually have this horrid disease, mental disorder, gender dysphoria, that such a small percentage that the devil could use this tiny minority to drive this agenda now that has children. And this is a classic story, isn't it? A kid that doesn't want to tell, that doesn't want to disappoint the dad. Well, you know what? I don't want to go to university to play sports, Dad. I want to go to university to learn math. Or the reverse. I don't want to go to the university to learn math. I want to play sports. We all have things that our parents wanted us to do and that, you know, we didn't do. But the idea that mutilation is acceptable to bring about the end that the parent wants, this is new territory here, folks. So you write about, I've seen you write about what Orwell would think or how Orwell maybe warned about this. He couldn't have possibly have warned about this. He couldn't have known that human beings are capable of being as screwed up.
I know. Well, it is. It's like, you know, we are the little boy in the Emperor's New Clothes saying, hang on, you know, there is no, this is the Emperor's New Clothes, you know, and when you see what the police said to Harry today, and they said, you know, why would you want to tweet hate? It's like, it's not hate.
Not hate.
It is not hate, you know, and I don't understand why you'd want to do this. And we, you know, because basically what happened was, you know, Harry got phoned up and told off by the police for liking a limerick that was perceived as anti-trans. And he put in a complaint, you know, how dare you ring me up? and tell me off about, you know, what I'm saying on social media. It's not against the law. I'm not committing a crime. And yeah, and the chief inspector, or the inspector, sorry, was, you know, you might upset the trans community and you shouldn't do that. And it is absurd, and particularly, and it's so interesting, you know, you might have seen on my Twitter feed earlier, I said close but no cigar, because, you know, they'd reported a series of tweets that I'd said, and they weren't offensive, they weren't abusive, they were just talking about, have you, and I have, I've sat with, I've met with people, I've sat with a mum and dad whose daughter is now identifies as a man and got male pattern baldness, and, you know, they've had their breasts removed, and at the same time they were having their breasts removed, they were trying to comfort a friend who was having to have them removed because of breast cancer. And, you know, when they see their, you know, their beautiful daughter with male pattern baldness and wanting to have a baby and can't, who's completely mutilated her body, it is heartbreaking. And it is heartbreaking for, you know, the mothers. That the Heritage Foundation had a conference, and they did a live stream today. I must catch up with it. And it was about the medical complications of the surgery. And, you know, you've got mothers, you know, desperate to stop their girls from having, because as well, you know, rapid onset gender dysphoria is disproportionately affecting girls, not boys. And, you know, you're seeing girls having their breasts cut off. And, you know, mothers are in distress about this. Yeah, mothers are absolutely distraught. Now, and everyone's saying...
I was going to ask you, Caroline Farrow here on the Mike Church Show on the Crusade Channel. We need an ID here. King size, truth from radio size speakers, always online at crusadechannel.com. I have to ask before we run out of time, do you think that that there is a backlash that is beginning? That even people that consider themselves liberals, I mean, the Fourth Wave Now group, the woman that started it, she is a self-professed, very progressive liberal woman who's in favor of homosexual marriages and what have you. But she started the group because I believe it was her daughter wanted to transition. And when she fought her, the daughter threatened basically to rat her out to the cops and, you know, be transferred to some foster home or something. And this horrified her. And that's why she started Fourth Wave Now, which is a support group, basically a Twitter feed and a website, a support group for other mothers and other fathers and parents in the UK that are what you just described. That little boy or little girl who said, I don't want to be a boy. I want to go back. I want to take it all back. I want to be a girl. Do you think that there is that maybe common sense is starting to, I mean, because common sense even says, all right, there's something really jacked up about this.
Yeah, no, and I think, I mean, for me, one of the interesting things observing this is I see real parallels between, you know, the trans madness and also abortion, because, you know, people are saying, let's not use euphemisms, let's talk about the actual reality. But yes, I think there is a backlash actually beginning. And I think obviously some people are scared of that because, you know, they've got this strange Margaret Atwood vision of a utopia, you know, that if socially conservative ideals reign, then we're going to sort of have a bizarre Handmaid's Tale situation, which is actually what we're heading towards under a liberal regime, whereby, you know, these people need surrogates and, you know, women are commoditized for sex. And, you know, the sensible feminists, and there are some sensible feminists, lots of sensible feminists, who are very anti-porn and are, you know, very, you know, calling out, you know, the trans nonsense for what it is. But I think the way it's going to play out actually is going to start with freedom of expression, freedom of the press, you know, freedom of thought. And I think this is going to be the big battle that sort of starts this, in that, you know, the press are vehemently on, and the general public as well, vehemently on side with this, that we ought to be able to say what we want within, you know, obviously no one should be inciting, you know, religious hatred against anybody, or, you know, nobody should be inciting hatred against a bunch of people, you know, you do have to be quite careful. And rightly so. You shouldn't be going out saying, you know, right, let's go and burn down the gay bars and let's go and burn down the mosques and the synagogues. You know, that's clearly an incitement. But
that's ethical. You're talking ethics now.
Yeah, exactly.
How are we going to regain ethics without regaining a moral foundation?
Well, quite. But I think certainly what my case has done, and I didn't expect this, you know, I was hoping to get a bit of outrage and a bit of support and what have you, but I didn't expect my case. Someone said to me the very morning, Caroline, this is going to be the big case that is going to reverse this sort of awful gender ideology. And I said, don't be so ridiculous. Don't be so ridiculous. This is silly. You know, but I didn't expect it to go as global as it has. And because I am a name now, and I'm a much better known name than I was a week ago, there's going to be a much more open discussion about freedom of expression, freedom of conscience. I think hate crime is going to be seen as the specious thing that it is. That there's no such thing as a hate crime. So hate crime is only ever an aggravating factor. So if you go and punch someone in the face, that's assault and it's bad. If you go and punch someone in the face because they're a Jew or a Muslim or a Catholic, then it's hate crime is the aggravating factor. But, you know, words in and of themselves are not a hate crime. So I think this could, the first way it's going to play out in the UK, hopefully, is I think the police are going to come under a lot of pressure to back off a lot of these, you know, prosecutions against people, because I think they're really, really realizing this is bad news for them, because you can only police by public consent. And what they are doing is really undermining public faith and trust in the police. So a friend of mine said to me, when all this, in the midst of this storm, she said, have you looked at Surrey Police's Twitter feed? It's a complete dumpster. It's a, you know,
crumpster.
dumpster, she said. And she said, you know, it's just a nightmare. And the same happened with Harry's local force, Humberside Police. You know, they were opened themselves to huge amounts of derision and scorn. And hang on a minute, we are in the middle of a knife crime epidemic in the UK. I mean, it's very scary, actually. I recorded a podcast for someone today, and they live in Acton, which is West London. And they said, oh, do you want to come to my house in Acton, or do you want to go to the newspaper's offices? And I went to the newspaper's offices because I just thought, gosh, you know, even Acton, which was once, you know, a nice area of London, is, you know, slightly rough. And we're just seeing it everywhere. So the UK really needs to get on top of, you know, our violent crime epidemic that we've got, and not be kind of, you know, reporting each other for hurt feelings on Twitter. I think a couple of things could happen, or I hope a couple of things will happen. Because the backlash is never immediate. You know, it's never all at once. I think the first thing that is going to happen is we get the police backing off people, rightly so, as they should do. I mean, it was extraordinary. If you watch that Good Morning interview, that Good Morning Britain interview I did yesterday.
Yes.
You know, there was Susanna Reid, one of the hosts, saying, well, Susie Green clearly felt alarmed and distressed and targeted. And, you know, so that's why she called the police. It's like, if I called the police every time somebody hurt my feelings on Twitter, I'd never, you know, I'd just like set up an apartment in the local police station. You know, even as hurting, setting out to hurt someone's feelings is not nice. It's not pleasant. It's not something we should do. But it's, you know, being terribly rude is not a crime, actually. It shouldn't be a crime. So I'm hoping that the police, I think it'll play out firstly with the police backing off a bit. The other thing I think is going to happen, and this is why the Mermaids organization is panicking so badly, because they're really terrible at PR as well. This is the other thing. They are really terrible. I mean, what they did with me was just ridiculous. You know, it really backfired on her. She thought, ultimately, Susie Green thought that she could silence me and wanted to punish me. And she actually admitted on the BBC that I had misgendered, actually. That was part of her complaint. And I thought, yeah, of course it was. That's the peg you were using to hang it on. So she was admitting that I had misgendered and it was against the Equality Act. But she also said, well, it was because she was a journalist and she was criticizing my actions. Yeah, too right, lady. I was doing that. So I think Susie Green, and, you know, of course, it's massively backfired. And then, you know, before I went on Good Morning Britain, she was they issued a statement, you know, Caroline Farrow on Good Morning Britain. I thought, I couldn't believe it was happening, Mike. It was really surreal. I thought, right. Who am I? They're issuing a statement that they're, and they really, you know, they were saying, let's make this debate less toxic. But yet they really dehumanized me in it by calling me the tweeter. They then, after saying, let's make this debate less toxic, someone said to them, oh, fingers crossed, Farrow gets the karma, all the bad karma that's coming their way. And they liked it. So I'm thinking, hang on a minute, you want to make this more, you know, less toxic, and yet you're still engaging in these sort of unpleasant behaviors. But they're also...
Now, I need to interject again and try to play an interviewer. I read where you said that the people that are on GMB are good people and that you love these people.
Yeah, they're good. They're normally really good. So I don't know what happened there because it was really...
Maybe it's somebody else in an office job and not the people that you deal with?
No, well, normally the crew that I deal with at Good Morning Britain are amazing and they're very professional. They're very kind and very nice.
Right. I read that.
Yeah. And they're really good. And so I wonder, you know, Piers Morgan is normally really on side with this. And I wonder whether they were just trying to close me down and shut me down because of legals and editorial. And they didn't want to be hearing about children being castrated over your cornflakes in the morning on breakfast TV, you know. So they were really trying to be even-handed, I think, by saying, well, of course, this should never have been a police matter. This is really silly. You know, the police have got better things to do, and this has to stop, you know. And Susie Green has to stop using the police as a private militia. So, you know, on the one hand, I think they were trying to be supportive and say, no, this should not have gone as far as it did, and it only got called off because of who I was. But then on the other hand, they were trying to say, well, this is really terrible, and you're not helping, Caroline. You know, you're not helping, and you're making the debate far more toxic, and you know, you need to be much kinder and nicer, and isn't this terribly personal what you said? And I wonder if there's an editorial direction going on there, because that was Susanna, the female host, you could tell she was really, really incensed by it, but I think Piers was just, you know, maybe trying to virtue signal a bit. But I thought, gosh, it comes to something, doesn't it, where in the UK we're more angry about somebody calling out castration and mutilation than we are the actual act itself, you know. And it was, how dare you use this intemperate language, how dare you call people these names, when actually
it wasn't intemperate language. I'm sitting there watching and screaming and going like, that's a fact. The woman who was asking you, that's a fact. Okay,
a fact. Yeah, and she was saying,
that's a fact.
And she was saying, well, it wasn't illegal in Thailand when he had it done. You should have made that clear. Well, actually, it's illegal in Thailand now as a result. And, you know, what I couldn't get onto, because she wouldn't let me get a word in edgeways, was the fact that in the UK,
it's not illegal in some places in Colombia to go buy cocaine or whatever.
Does that mean
I can fly there and I can bring a couple bales back with me because I did it? That is a ridiculous excuse.
I know. And also, the other thing I wanted to point out was that, you know, the cross-sex hormones that she had her child on from the age of 12 or 13, you're not allowed them in the UK under the age of 16. So, you know, yes, and she by the time he was 13, this child's sterile. And she was like, oh, chemically castrated. Yes, because that's what she did. She rendered her child sterile. Now, in the UK, on the NHS, if you don't have any children and you want a vasectomy or you want tubal ligation, they won't do it for you. They won't do it because they say, you can't make this decision. You haven't got children and you're very young. And no, we're not going to do it. And yet we're kind of saying, oh, and, you know, and Susie's saying, well, there's no link with mental health and infertility, child infertility. And she's just making stuff up.
She's nuts. All right. We're going to have to leave it there. But boy, howdy.
Yeah, yeah.
The world knows your story now.
Thanks, Mike.
I of course, there's going to be much more on this, Because I imagine now that the trans mafia is going to go after Harry the Owl.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And
but he's a former cop, though. He's a former cop. He's a big boy. He can take it. Yeah. And he's not going to back down. No. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, well, and that's a great... So that's the former cop that you were talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, now it makes all sense. Okay. All right. So I think that rational people are reading headlines, and I think there's a little bit of Holy Ghost at work here, too, are reading headlines going like, you clowns can't stop the knife violence. You want to have GPS trackers in the butts of knives, but you want to have police officers wasting their time ringing up mothers of five because they used the word wrong pronoun on a social media site? Are you insane? I mean, this just doesn't make sense. No matter how far out in left field you might be, I mean, you're not detached from all of reality and all the world. Oh, some of them are. So I suspect next week we'll still have plenty to talk about. So
absolutely.
We will continue the Caroline Farrow and family Crusader Night prayers to Our Lady for your protection and to Saint Michael and all that, because I think that the cavalry has been called in. You are in a supernatural battle with some of these people, and that's important to remember. So, hey, keep the faith, and we'll keep the faith here, and we'll stay on the story, as I know you will.
Okay, fantastic. Take care, Mike. God bless.
Okay, God bless you, too. All right, that's Caroline Farrow there, folks.